Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com. Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. My name is Justin Robert Young, introing the show for a traveling Andrew Main, who will not be able to make it to the show today. Joining me, as always, Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, I felt like I needed to grab a drink and be halfway with it to my lips in order to prompt you to introduce me. But separate from that, I've always wanted to be the guy who says, stepping in for Andrew Main, who is on assignment. I always wanted to drop that phrase.
He is assigning his way back to Los Angeles from New York, where he's been for a bunch of businesses. Joining us, Brian Brushwood as well, who I tried to catch drinking his bottle this time, but he didn't spit it out, which was very good. Tom Merritt. Tom Merritt will be the third in our triumvirate of weird. How you doing, buddy?
I'm feeling weird and honored to be included.
Weirdly honored to be among the Weird Things crew. Justin, I have a story for you.
Go ahead.
I don't want to encourage people to manufacture criticisms of the Weird Things podcast, but I do feel like if...
Could be good for the economy, though.
If Saturday Night Live was going to do a parody of the Weird Things podcast, taking from it... You know, some themes that we keep coming back to. What are some of the things that might show up in this Saturday Night Live version of the Weird Things podcast?
Well, we talk a lot about SpaceX.
Right.
We talk a lot about ghosts or certain scenarios that tend to just kind of be snakes. You know, those are probably, animal attacks that have shrouded themselves in some sort of odd mystery, SpaceX and goblins.
Okay, so let's take just the...
Goblins are real in Africa.
Let's just take the SpaceX element. Let's take what some might call our unhealthy hero worship obsession with Elon Musk. And in this Saturday Night Live sketch, we're going to cut midway to us going nuts over some amazing thing Elon Musk just also did. What are some things that we might be praising?
Well, you know, this is not a great time to be Elon Musk hero worshippers comparatively. You know, they had probably the biggest mishap in company history, SpaceX company history, a couple weeks ago. You know, otherwise on the Tesla front, things are going well. I hear the stock is up.
From whom do you hear that constantly?
One person over and over and over again. You know, I didn't buy it when he told me to. And boy, is he happy to remind me. I would say I don't know what we would be freaking out about.
Well, I mean, if we were going to do a cartoon version of us, it seems that despite all of the difficulties, despite having to, you know, tend to this multi-billion dollar business and multiple businesses, it seems like Elon Musk would be doing a push up on the moon or something crazy, right?
Sure.
Like what are in your wildest fantasy, what are some things that Elon Musk would do that are extroverted and showboaty and insane?
This would be the time. You know, that he would probably be at his most weird. You know, Burning Man is coming up in a month. He's a huge Burning Man fan, so I would say now he's probably getting his Burning Man encampment together. You know, he
shows up to Burning Man and erects a bigger Burninger Man. The man is on fire constantly, and it's a taller, better version of the Burning Man.
Well, and don't forget Palmer Luckey, the Oculus guy, was shown dancing in the desert with a VR headset on the cover of Time. So he's got to top that, too.
Okay, so what would your guess, Tom, be?
I would imagine that he would be the Burning Man dancing in the desert.
Okay. But again, you got to remember that SNL is a comedy show, which means it has to be ridiculous, which means as we tune into our sketch, the three of us are celebrating the fact that Elon Musk's Instagram has a photo of him pulling a Harry Houdini dancing on the top wing of a biplane.
So it says here, Elon Musk went for a nice wing walk. What could possibly go wrong? The picture itself is a silhouette of a old biplane, a bygone era biplane.
The
where
kind
you
Harrison
see
Ford
just
might pilot.
A shadow of Elon Musk is certainly wing walking in the center of that plane.
Is that
sure that's him?
Well, okay, it's either him or, you know, it's a very elaborate hoax, which doesn't seem like that would be a smart investment of his time and energy, right?
Well, dancing on a biplane doesn't seem like a smart thing to do for the investors who have a, you know, vested interest in you remaining alive.
He doesn't say dancing.
Well, correct. Although it does look like he's in the middle of some rad ass hip hop moves.
I mean, how does the insurance cover this?
Well, if you look closely, you could see he's tethered in some way to the top of a biplane.
Yeah. I mean, because that's what a wing walk is, right?
Like that's like, what the adjuster looks for.
Is a known quantity.
I would imagine that there's some high-end service for daredevils that, you know, dude, you know, tethers you so you can't fall forward into the propeller, and if you fall backward, you're still hanging on to the back of the plane or whatever, and that, you know, it's one of those wild one-day adventures that they sell, and
well,
that they're...
Yeah.
And it's like they teach you, they're like, before they take you up on the plane, they're like, okay, this is the Cabbage Patch. Here's the Running Man.
I'm just thinking there are professional athletes who sign contracts that don't allow them to ride motorcycles in the off season.
Yeah.
Because they might damage their $1 million bodies. I can't imagine Elon Musk doesn't have some sort of similar kind of agreement with his stockholders.
Dude, that's, I suppose.
But really?
That's,
I mean, like, how... How much more dangerous is this than skydiving?
Oh, not at all, I would imagine. In fact, I would say less because you have...
I'm going to take a guess that there is a prop from behind him, so he is leaning into it. I'm going to guess that there are boots that he has put his feet into that are locking them down onto the wing, and then he probably has tethers beyond that that are securing him to both...
I disagree. I think that.
Don't think so?
No, I think it's.
He's freebooting.
Yeah, I think that that's. Well, and keep in mind that this comes from. If you want a barefoot water ski, which my dad taught me how to do like 10 years ago, you have to get the boat up to like 35 miles per hour, and you slide on your butt. On hopefully a glass-like surface of water, and then you plant your heels, and then you slowly rock on up. And once you're on up, everything's fairly automatic, right? So looking at the wing walking, I'll bet that doing all of those things would be more challenging than just sort of riding the air currents. Because my guess is, to wing walk effectively, you have to do it on a relatively still day, not a lot of crosswinds or whatever. So, but...
Okay. Go to West Coast Spin Doctors. .com.
West Coast Spin Doctors.
Is this the splinter group from the Spin Doctors of musical fame? Or
yeah. Two princes will greet you, and you will decide which one you will choose.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. Check out our unique wing walking experience.
So the pictures here, you there are not boots, but there are foot things that you slide your feet into.
Oh, doggone it. Yeah,
you are strapped to the prop.
It's not a tether so much as you're just backed up like Christ against the cross.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is a harness that is keeping you to the thing on there. And actually you can see they have pictures of the whole apparatus.
Oh, I'm so bummed. I'm so bummed.
Wait. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe because I at some point in my brain there is a memory of seeing the apparatus that goes stuff like that before. But what did you think it was?
I thought it was a tether. I mean, understand, you know, vaudevillians in the 1920s would do this legitimately without the benefit of a stick against, you know. So like coming and both of us were drawing on our previous experience. In this case, my previous experience said, you know, vaudevillians used to do it. Houdini did it. It can be done. What's the closest thing I've done to this? I'm like, well, barefoot water skiing, the last thing you'd want to do is lock yourself into some kind of grid boots or whatever. You would want to, you know, ride the current of the air as it blew past you and lean into it. But then reality struck, and all of a sudden I was heartbroken. turns out, Santa Claus isn't real, people.
So wait a minute.
Do you think
spoiler, less of Elon Musk that he, the CEO of three companies that are hugely influential, had a harness and wasn't just kind of standing?
Man, I guess so. But mainly because if you look at the Instagram photo, you see what appears to be a very tiny tether, maybe like the barest admission that he has any kind of security. But then now in the context of seeing these new wing walking photos, you could tell there's a giant post he's leaning against.
Yeah.
And what looks like the tiny tether is just a tiny strut on that massive safety thing. I don't know. I'm disappointed. Sorry.
Like if he went skydiving, like that would be certainly a little bit more de rigueur, right? Like a lot of people
and yet
go skydiving.
More dangerous.
But, like, probably more dangerous than what he did.
Are CEOs allowed to skydive? Is that a thing that the insurance policy covers? Like,
I mean, I guess so. Okay, so a CEO, let's also keep in mind, is likely a majority shareholder in the company, right? So he has a significant voice about saying what he will and will not do. And the same mechanizations that cause him to have a successful company and to be the kind of alpha male who is, you know, in charge of this stuff is the same thing that's going to allow him to kind of pull a, you know, insane Donald Trump thing and say, screw you.
But in order to have a public company, you have to agree to certain safeguards on the company, one of which is insurance. So that's not about what he wants. It's about what the company will say. Yes, we will underwrite your policy.
Okay. Scenario time. Brian, you are a CEO that is dead set on skydiving. Tom, you are his consigliere. You are trying to convince him desperately that this is not a good idea.
Tell you what, Tom, in my office now.
Yeah, sure, boss.
I've been thinking about it, and this weekend I'm going to have a few brewskis. I'm going to give a call to some of my old college buddies.
That's great.
I'm going to jump out of a plane. Going to jump out of a plane.
Wait, hold on. Back up step. Brewskis great. Friends great. Jumping out of a plane, not okay.
I mean, we have Tom, number one, last time I checked, this is America, and the other time I checked, you worked for me. So
and the reason I do work for you is so that I can tell you when you're about to do something horribly stupid, which is what you, those were your words when you hired me.
All right. First of all, let's be clear. I think Neshcom here on our board of advisors makes a very good point. I was not clear. I said I was going to jump out of a plane. I meant with a parachute, okay? Glad we got that figured out.
Makes all the
difference. I will see you on Monday.
Yeah.
Safe and sound on the ground.
So that's covered in our policy, right?
What policy? Like our
ethics
policy?
Remember when we filed the IPO and you made the billions of dollars? Do you remember that?
It was great. Right. It was a great weekend. I got really hammered that weekend. That's how we made all that money. Yeah.
You wanted to jump out of the boat.
Brian's phone rings.
Ring, ring, ring.
Hang on. Go time.
Hey, man, we're about to go skydiving. Where are you, bro?
Just dealing with the old ball and chain. I'm sorry, two balls on this one. Am I right?
Oh, he's got testicles. I get it. Yeah. Anyway, come on down. It's ready to go.
All right, bloop. Listen.
Sir, I don't have testicles, and you know that's a sore point.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Look, I didn't want to make things awkward, so I brought up your testicles.
No, that's I get it. I get it. It's the friends. I don't want to stop you from jumping out of a plane, Brian.
Oh, well,
I don't.
Great.
I just want to make sure that it's not going to get the company sued and you lose the billions of dollars.
Yeah, well, explain to me in what situation we get sued. Last day, I could jump out of anybody. Look at that IPO agreement. Does it say that I won't jump out of a plane?
It says the CEO agrees to be insured against material harm And that policy must be legally talking, binding under the laws of the United States, et cetera, et cetera.
I like Justin's
Brian
version.
Sneaks out of the room, gets into his car, and drives away as Tom looks up from his sheet and sees nothing in front of him.
I throw a fistful of money out the back saying, for your troubles!
Brian, you are on the plane now. You are taking off. You get one final call from a pleading Tom Merritt. Tom, what do you tell him?
Go, Tom.
Brian, look, you're all clear to jump out of the plane.
That's great. That's great. Bye. Click.
You need to sign some
that's it.
Papers. That was just forged a signature.
It's a little windy.
Uh-oh.
You fly out of the plane after it has to go to another drop zone. Because the one that you were going to use was not available because of the weather.
Yeah.
You're flying down.
Yeah.
And you realize that because of where the flight pattern was, you have to land in a vineyard that you were not supposed to.
Okay. That's fine. Look, I'm a billionaire CEO. I'll just buy the vineyard when I land there. I'll claim it as sovereign territory, and I'll recruit mercenaries to take on the local governments. Yank, parachute out.
Land. All right. Your parachute is deployed at 4,000 feet. Or sorry, at 2,500 feet. You probably should have pulled it at 4,000, but you took up that time thinking about how awesome it'll be to own a vineyard after you land in it.
Yes.
At this point, you are now coming into view of power lines. As if by a spark of human imagination that you did not know your brain was capable of, you now telepathically connect to Tom Merritt.
Okay, so as I'm coming down, I suddenly realize my imminent death. And so I very quickly discover that I have the Force, and I use it to reach out to Tom Merritt. And I say,
Tom.
It's Brian.
Tom.
Are you there?
Brian, I always hear your voice in my head, but this time it feels like it's real.
I'm communicating with you telepathically. It looks like you were right. I shouldn't have gotten drunk and jumped out of a plane. I'm headed towards power lines. What should I do?
Is there any way you can kick your legs and sort of move yourself? Can you change the trajectory?
Look, I've tried it. I've tried kicking. I've tried screaming, and I've already pooped my pants. If you're going
to
say that next.
Now, when you went through the training, did they show you how to adjust? You know, the parachute, so you can move yourself in the air.
Oh, yeah. No, they did. Now that I think about it, let me. I'm moving. Looks like I'm heading towards those wires, bro.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you're coming up on the wires really fast, and there's nothing you can do.
A little bit. Real quick, let's last will and testament this baby. Which we shall tell the shareholders.
No worries. I forged your signature on the insurance paper. On the papers, we'll be fine.
Thank you. It's been lovely knowing you. I'll see you on the other side, brother.
The good news is that you avoid the power lines.
What? Oh, dude. Good. Oh, hold on, real quick. Quick heads up, I didn't die. I avoided the power lines.
Okay. Wow, I wish I had unsent me. But that's great news. Well,
of course, that conversation happens in a fraction of a second. Despite the fact that you flared your canopy to slow down and land, a small crosswind forces you to your right, a pole, the electrical pole, catches your right arm and tears it off, stripping the tissue from the shoulder to mid-forearm.
Ah! Tom!
Yes, Tom! Brian, I thought you were okay.
Tom! Dude, you remember when I used to give you the middle finger with my right arm?
Vaguely.
Yeah, you remember when I used to have a right arm?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Not so much now.
Oh, we're covered. Covered.
Okay. Good. Good.
This happened in October 2013, to the CEO of Squaw Valley Ski Holdings.
Oh my God!
Oh my God!
Andy Wirth lost his right arm. With his
For the record, Bonnie just burst into the room, wanting to know what happened. Here, Bonnie, hop on the mic. Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. We just finished up a story in which a CEO decided to go skydiving and had his right arm ripped off. What you heard was the live dramatic reenactment of what that was probably like.
Okay, that was really disgusting. So, bye. I don't know. I saw somebody that had like in the news, somebody had their chute attached to their skin. Like there was no pack. It was like embedded in like
wait, what?
Grommets. Yeah, grommets through piercings on their back.
No. Wait, you saw this? All right, we'll see if Neshcom's able to find that story and put it up on the second screen here.
Oh, that's horrible though. Bye guys.
Yeah.
I'm taking all the children. Goodbye.
Okay, bye. Bye.
Usually that's a threat, but when it's their mother, I guess it's okay.
Yeah. Tom, my wife's taking all the kids. I don't have an arm.
Yeah, right? That was part of the separation agreement.
Yeah, dude, the skydiving CEO who cheated death.
Wow.
Oh, my God, that's terrifying.
I'm trying to find if he is still
insured,
the CEO.
I love the fact that Tom immediately took this to heart so deeply. He's like, but he's insured, right? He's fully covered, umbrella policy, right?
Oh, man. Hey,
the good news is that this CEO is one of Eddie Vedder's best friends.
Oh, well, good. Oh,
well, he still has that.
Yeah. Well, he is still alive.
No telephone line or power line can rip away Eddie Vedder's friendship.
Look at this first-person account. I caught a pole with my right arm. The pole tore off my arm and stripped all the tissue from my shoulder down to mid-forearm, which, okay, so I guess he still has a forearm, which is good.
Oh, by the way, he was flying high, literally and figuratively, because this happens October of 2013. In March of 2013... he is on national television as a part of Undercover Boss.
Oh, my God. Showing up there. He's like, totally not your CEO. Look at me. I have two arms with a paper mache like thing on there.
And then only 4 months later, as hot as he was, he gets his arm ripped off.
In the absence of a tourniquet and a right arm to tie one on, I took my left fist and stuffed it under my right armpit. It was very uncomfortable, to say the least, he says understatedly. I thought, what can I do to keep shock at bay? Shock kill. I'm sorry. What he said was,
What can I do to keep shock at bay?
Sorry, go ahead.
He does have it. He was born in Neubruck, West Germany.
As a Pearl Jam fan, I remembered the song Just Breathe. Since breathing slowly and steadily can help control trauma and shock. Oh my God. So
the lesson here is, if you are caught without a tourniquet, remember your Pearl Jam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that makes sense. I guess they
he was a former EMT.
And they put 12 units of blood in him. He told the doctor, just try to save my arm. If you have to take it a month from now, I'm okay with that. But try to save it now. So I guess they surgically reattached it, and I don't know how useful it is at that point. Oh my gosh!
Well, it helped him an undercover boss because.
But now he is an Iron Man a racer and general adventurer. It hasn't quelled his adventurous spirit.
Dude, what kind of person do you have to be where you go through that and you end up walking out of it with a cool party story? Huh. I tell you about the time I telepathically reached out to my assistant as my arm got ripped off.
Again.
Holy cow. Wow.
And so here we go. Neshcom says, in October 2013, Wirth's right arm was torn off and surgically reattached. Wirth returned to work after 50 days in the hospital and 23 surgeries on his right arm.
So, do we know how useful, or has he assessed how useful his right arm is after it got ripped off?
I have no idea.
Well, I imagine his lawyer is now his right arm.
Yeah. Yes, I would imagine. By the way, if anyone can find the story,
the final paragraph of this first-person account of his accident, I deeply regret putting my family through this. My wife Karen is remarkable. She told me that she wasn't going to stop me from skydiving, but I stopped jumping. I miss it. But if I were to strap on a canopy and go skydive, it'd be a great deal of stress that I can't do that to her. Or my kids. No note on his telepathic lawyer.
real quick, if anybody's watching in the chat, I would love it if somebody was able to find where Bonnie was talking about that story of somebody who surgically embedded a parachute into his body. But in the meantime, we should jump over and thank all the fine people who make our show possible. Right, Justin?
Absolutely. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Again, that is patreon.com/weirdthings.
Dude, look at this.
What in the world? We have 460 patrons at what number?
$666.66 per episode. Not gonna lie. I mean, our goal is to hit 1,000, but I would be way okay if we just lived around here.
Yeah, nobody give anything and nobody drop off.
Yeah, you either go straight to 1,000 or you stay right there.
You know what? Let's just do this. Wherever you are, just check in at patreon.com/weirdthings. Just don't let's let this be the new standard. Let's say never below 666.66.
Podcast of the beast.
Podcast of the beast.
Thanks to everybody who
and hold your the numbers.
Okay, by the way, Neshcom's like, "Oh yeah, by the way, I'm going to have to disagree on the not making any more money since I'm the one who makes money as a producer from it." So, all right. Because Neshcom is such an invaluable part of this show, who not only makes sure that everything goes on every single week, but also makes sure everything goes on when we are down one of our core members, then only because of that can we go above 666.
How about this? We just guarantee that moving forward, we always go up in increments that make our total all the same number, because that's pretty dope seeing all those sixes in a row. So let's go 777 and 77 cents. Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. Well, everybody give that and we'll be moving on up. But thanks to everybody for supporting this very show.
Hey, man, I don't know if we have a prearranged second story. I'm so fired up about, you know, our picks that I wouldn't mind jumping ahead on that, but I could also hold off.
So let's just do one more. This is an article from The Verge about the hoverboard, the Lexus hoverboard.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Let me post that in the chat and I'll throw it up on the screen.
The Lexus marketing stunt.
Yeah. Well, and
I mean, it's got reality to it.
Holy cow. But wait, real quick. Can we pause this? Because our intrepid crew has found it. DailyMail.com says no need for a harness. Daredevil leaps from 1,300 foot clifftop and free falls with parachute fixed to piercings embedded in his back, with his skin stretching under the strain of his own body weight. Oh my God. This incredible moment, a daredevil leaps from a clifftop with a parachute attached to piercings in the skin on his back.
Not gonna lie, that puts the Lexus hoverboard to shame.
Yeah, dude, this guy's a damn national hero. Wow.
See?
The Russian did the jump without a harness, instead attaching the parachute to metal piercings in his back.
No skin off my back.
I see what you did there. This dude, yeah, he's got like oh my God.
Oh
my God, that was hard to watch.
Oh,
that's got a pull.
Yeah, it's exactly what you would imagine. Just right now, no need for video. Just whatever you're picturing, that's what you're looking at.
Yeah. Four things clamped to your back and pulling backwards at a great amount of strength.
Oh my God. Could you imagine the possibility that you jump and it just rips out and your last thought is oops, as you telepathically scream to your lawyer, Tom Merritt? I mean, holy cow.
So yeah.
All right, so let's go back to marketing stunts with hoverboards. Air quotes on hoverboards. So tell me about this, Tom. Why is this bogus?
Oh, it's not bogus. It's just, you know, what they've done is created a liquid nitrogen cooled superconductor and magnet, and they put it in the shape of a hoverboard and created a park that it can ride on. And they're like, hey, guys, we've created a hoverboard.
But I thought the from the photo, it looked like it was hovering over cement or something. That wasn't the case.
They've got the they've got a specially created park for it.
Because I had seen.
Am I wrong about the park? Maybe I'm thinking.
No. They built a skate park just for it. This is, of course, you know, just the latest in what it, you know, what seems to be. Hey, we're in 2015, and in the parlance of Kevin Smith, we should have flying cars by now. So, I guess what we settle for is we should have hoverboards, and so now we're kind of creating these like semi vaporware, you know, vaporware is harsh, but like,
I mean, this is really
well. I would say high fidelity simulations of the cartoons we love from science fiction.
I mean, this is a real thing. Look at this, superconductors over a set of magnets. Well, the magnets are in the concrete, so it looks cool, but it's not something you could just go out and take out on the streets.
And again, like if you look at the full park, you can see the kind of concrete scars where they've carved out the track and run it over water, and then they remind you that you need power, Bojo, and
yeah, you need more power,
and it has to be cooled. It's not cost effective.
So it's 15 minutes and 15 minutes refill. But here's what I want to get to with this. Where is that line for us? Because right now there's a lot of us being like, meh, okay, whatever. It does what it says it does. It isn't a fraud per se.
Right.
But what is that line?
Well. So this is something that I think, and he gets a fair amount of criticism, including from members of this podcast. But, you know, this is something that I think Michio Kaku's book, Science of the Impossible, is really, really good at. He takes science fiction scenarios and proposes, okay, yes, it is not possible to move an object with your mind. However, we can build a MRI or something that recognizes the thought patterns, you know, of your intention to make an object move. And we can build a room that has robotic arms all over the place that that moves things when you think about them. So, again, like everything's fake and wrong, but at the end of the day, you are in a room, you look at an object, you think about it, and you want it to rise, and then it does rise. You know, granted, it would be easier to make everything a simulation, but it seems, well, I guess it is a simulation. This is a simulation of a physically impossible phenomenon, right?
Well, no, this is a real physical phenomenon. It's just a lot harder to pull off than they're making it look.
Agreed. But
right? They're kind of hiding the wires, if you will.
I mean, okay, at the end of the day, you're living in a world where you're moving objects with your mind. Who cares that it took a ridiculous expense for it? Like, does that count or does that not? Well, like, that's the question.
There's another company called ArxPax last year who demonstrated a hoverboard in Silicon Valley. They were very clear, like, this is the metal track it has to be on. This is why we're doing it, because we think we could use it in building and construction to provide some kind of earthquake mitigation. We have industrial uses in mind. So to me, it's all about the fact that Lexus is doing this so that you go, ooh, cool, Lexus built a hoverboard. There's really no other purpose for it than just getting their name out, which is fine, right? Whereas ArxPax is like, no, we're actually really trying to take this real physical phenomenon and figure out how to turn it into a working product. And they build a hoverboard to demonstrate it, which isn't that far off from what Lexus is doing. They're trying to market their version of it. I just think their version of it has more likely potential to affect our lives than what Lexus is doing.
Maybe I think this because I'm a magician, but to me, this is a magic trick. And it's fine that it's a magic trick. It's delightful. It creates.
Is it a magic trick, though? I mean, I think it's totally less than a magic trick.
Oh, no. It's totally a magic. You are creating an illusion. The only difference is they're not calling it a magic trick, because God forbid, if you called it a magic trick, though, you would have to, you know, keep a secret method. But
but I think here's the issue. The issue is that we are living in an era where, like, the only reason why we feel that there is any kind of line, if not duplicity or lack of honesty to this, is that we live in a world where so much of this, like so many miracles, are available to us on a commercial level, right? That it's not just that these things can exist or exist in a lab, it's that we can have them affect our real life today, you know, or like that they are available for purchase within 2 months.
That's actually a really, really good point, because it puts us in the position of, in a world where we're so accustomed to all of the miracles we were promised in our science fiction of childhood, you know, coming true in a practical, real sense, something that is such an obvious, over-the-top simulation of it does feel a little bit out of place.
I still take issue with simulation. Like, this is a real effect that they're showing. It's just not widely practical.
Well,
it's not nearly as easy as they like you to think. From the way they're shooting.
All right, we do have Brian. Do we have an open line?
Yeah, you know what? I'll open up Night Attack Show. I'm assuming we have.
If not, I actually do have my phone stuff set up.
Oh, they're using a Ronin to shoot that.
In the chat room can either if we get the Skype thing set up, or you can probably just call me and we can everybody could hear.
Here I am now logged in on Night Attack Show. If he wants to call in on Skype on Night Attack
Show, so Jaime, go ahead and give a call in.
By the way, Jaime is one of our most qualified longtime listeners to the show. A very, very talented scientist and technician.
My issue here isn't what they're pulling off isn't real, because again, Arx Pax is pulling off a very similar thing. It's that their purpose in showing this is to get you to go, "Wow, Alexis." There's no other purpose to it.
I mean, again,
Arx
like
Pax is doing the same thing with the same demonstration, and their purpose is to say, "Hey, we think we can do a lot of cool things with this physical effect."
Yeah, I guess I don't have any gripe. Like everything's been that way. We've seen great, great advances from, you know, for example, the Ansari X Prize. The Ansari folks didn't add their name to the X Prize, you know, out of the goodness of their heart. It's because they wanted everyone to call it the Ansari X Prize. But there was...
They had an X Prize that was meant to actually advance things, whereas Lexus isn't doing anything to advance anything.
They're inspiring young minds. All right, we got Jaime Ruiz on the line. What's up, Jaime?
Hey guys. Okay, the effect is called quantum locking, and it's one of the coolest things around. Basically, you lower a superconducting covered ceramic, lower the temperature by putting liquid nitrogen, and it will just stay like locked in space next to some magnets. So,
specifically, we're looking at some video of a demonstrator right now. Like, if you tilt it kind of sideways, it stays sideways. If you tilt it diagonally, it stays diagonal. And if it's on a track, it'll spin all the way around, which is, I guess, what they did with the hoverboard.
So if they had covered the whole skate park with magnets, it would have been basically your hoverboard. The problem I have with it is not that it is not a real thing. It's actually this is even more exotic than the one that flies on top of a copper plate.
Right. Correct.
So this is a material step forward from what we saw with the Kickstarter a few months ago.
Yes. The only problem is that they cheapen the whole thing because they make it look like it's concrete and it isn't.
Well, but
so instead of, because that was part of what. The issue was with that first Kickstarter was that people felt that there was maybe a deliberate theatrical shading, in that all of the videos had no sound because
it's loud.
Because the thing is super loud.
That it was all, you know, copper plating. And so Lexus, having no interest in proving anything scientifically, decided to kind of theatrically shade that even more by making it look like there was concrete, when really that was a copper magnetic track.
Most likely very powerful either neodymium magnets placed in a track and then covered with some concrete stucco or maybe electromagnets. But they could have paved the whole thing with magnets, but it would have been more expensive.
I would say significantly so, if they're powerful neodymium magnets. So what's your judgment on here? It sounds like we're a little bit kind of divided on whether we think this is a fair play or not.
Still at Work says that the Verge podcast said it was wood painted to look like concrete.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I assume whatever conducting issue was below that.
Yep.
Right. Well, this I really like the machine itself. Like the hoverboard itself is very exotic. It not only holds the liquid nitrogen in there, but the superconducting ceramics have to be large in order to hold a person. So there is some achievement here, but they kind of cheapened it with you know the publicity stunt.
Yeah, I guess I'm not. I'm just not as bothered by it.
TV 69388 mystery scientist is what we'll call him in the chat room. Says this is silent, so different than the other board that we saw on Kickstarter. But the flux pinning requires traveling directly over the poles, and it would not work if the whole skate park was covered.
Well, again, imagine a skate park, though, where you had tracks that you memorized the patterns to. You know, I assume that they can intersect, and you can, you know, you're going to like, oh, I'm going to do this maneuver that's three figure eights, and then one, you know, a leap over a ramp or whatever. Like, I think that, like, if we saw that it was on a skateboard with wheels that was clearly on a track, we'd feel it's fair game. I don't necessarily understand why it's not fair game that you don't see the wheels and that they've covered up the tracks. To me, it's still more magical. It's just, you know, yes, it's not the imaginary cartoon version of a hoverboard that we saw in Back to the Future 2, but it's its own unique thing that's wonderful in its own unique ways.
I agree. There's some other interesting things. Quantum locking also works upside down, so you could hang from it.
Dude, picture that, right? Yeah.
You get that pull from the plane.
All of a sudden, I hate it now.
No, and the effect itself is very interesting and exotic. Basically, you put the board over the magnetic field, and then you make it cold. So it kind of locks in place. So it should be able to go on walls and whatever. So,
thank you so much. If people want to talk to you more about this on Twitter, Tensor Guy, correct?
Correct.
At TENSORGUY. All right, we're going to drop you off the line because
my pleasure, guys.
Thanks, man.
I think it's time for us to talk about picks. You guys have picks?
Pigs.
What do you got? Oh, shoot. Can I give a... Actually, that would have me having two picks. But spoiler alert for tomorrow's spoiler in time on Cord Killers, Tom. Guess what children's focused Star Wars related cartoon I started watching with my daughter.
Did you now?
I certainly did. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. But I'm watching Star Wars Rebels and really enjoying it.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad to hear that, actually. I'm in season two of Clone Wars and really enjoying that. But that's tomorrow's show.
That's fine. We'll hold off on that.
Brian, so you were wrestling before the show on exactly how much you wanted to talk about your pick or how to talk about your pick. So go.
Yeah, well, specifically, it's challenging because I loved it a lot. I loved it so much more than I thought I would.
What was it?
Well, I won't play coy. Normally we play coy and build up and then reveal our pick. My pick is Kim Stanley Robinson's Aurora, which came out recently. If most people know Kim Stanley Robinson from, you know, he wrote Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars. He also wrote The Martians, developed this very plausible world in which life is extended long enough and that people are smart enough with new technologies to actually terraform Mars and the interplanetary geopolitical debates that would come from it, which I enjoyed a lot. It's very, very big, though. It's a long journey, but you're left feeling like you walked out from actually living on Mars for, 100 years or so. Aurora is a different book, and I'm going to speak only in terms of the opening of the book, because so as to avoid any spoilers. But it takes place, the opening scene takes place on an ark. You know, we've discussed the possibility of an ark ship, and there's this this ship is it's got two rings creating, a significant amount of G-forces, 12 different biomes per ring, each modeled on existing, places on Earth. You got your tundra, you've got different areas that, you figure each biome is a few kilometers by a few kilometers, so a dozen square kilometers or whatever. And, you have sunlight simulated, you have day-night cycles, the circadian rhythms and all, And it, what's interesting is that it takes place with it tells the story of the generation who grew up on the ship, and they're going to be the ones that arrive at I forget which star it is, but you know, call it Alpha Centauri, it doesn't matter. They're the ones who get dealt the hand of finding what it is they encountered. They're the ones. It deals a lot with the fact that this is the seventh generation to grow up in this ship, and there are certain realities that are happening biologically that are making things difficult. You have with a guy, I think they call it like zoo syndrome or whatever. You have this these evolutionary pressures that when you don't have enough biodiversity make things very difficult, and how they deal with it. I got to admit, they encounter a problem, as you would imagine, because it's a book. But the solution they choose to follow is not the solution I would have picked, and it's not the solution I was rooting for as a reader. And instead, I found myself following the journey of on this book of something that I disagreed with, and yet by the end, I felt like maybe they were right. And I'm speaking in code because I don't want to take anything away from anyone who's going to enjoy this book. But I'll tell you what, let's give you all a couple of weeks to read it. But the book ends with a very, very, I don't want to say quiet moment, but a small moment that most of us have experienced before. And everything that happened before then felt so big and so heavy that I was utterly shocked that here I am watching somebody who has been through a lot go through a small moment that's exactly like a small moment that I went through. And the credits rolled and I burst into tears. I couldn't even understand why I did. And I think it just was the weight of the bigness of the story that just felt crushing. Or maybe it was because the small moment was an exact parallel of a small moment that I had 1 year ago during the crazy stresses of shooting the TV show and so on. But it was tremendous. I think in some ways it's even better than the Mars trilogy. I loved it a lot, and I don't really have a tremendously good reason for why. I would love to hear what everyone else thinks, though. My pick is definitely Kim Stanley Robinson's Aurora. Specifically, I did the audiobook version, which was exquisite. Well performed. And speaking of which, actually, I'm glad that that we got this reminder real quick before we get you, picks from you guys. We got an email from a fan who, Jeremy, who called me and asked that he started to tell me all this on the phone. And I said, whatever you're going to tell me, write it up in an email, send it to me with the subject, forward this to Neshcom because he's awesome. And that's exactly what he did. So this is what Jeremy wrote. And I mentioned this because Jeremy, when he called, I was in the middle of Aurora and just ended up talking to him about it. Jeremy says, "Hey guys, I just wanted to send an appreciation email because of how big of an influence you have all been in my life. I caught Brian on the phone because he's a lunatic who has access to his personal cell phone freely available online, and he suggested I type all this up in an email. I'm studying international relations with minors in Chinese in physics in Washington, D.C. right now and going into my junior year. At my school, we're required to publish full research papers as part of our senior year, and I've gone ahead and started on mine early. It's a paper about international space agency relations and the influence that private space corporations have had on national space programs. For postgraduate education, I intend to get a master's in either mechanical engineering or physics. After that, I want to. If I go with physics, I'm going to go for a doctorate relating to orbital mechanics, in large part due to weird things. I wholeheartedly intend to eventually work for SpaceX and, or in the best case scenario, become an astronaut. I just wanted to say thank you to you guys for keeping it weird and for helping to show me something that has now become my life's passion. I've been in the world since the early BB Live Show days. I've followed Weird Things in just about its inception as well. All I could say is that you guys are amazing and it's been a tremendous influence in my life. Thank you so much. Keep it weird. Jeremy Riggs Davis," and he throws up the Diamond Club. Thank you so much, Jeremy. Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool.
And of course, you can email in to, I guess, do we have an official? We should probably just set up an email that just goes to Neshcom.
Yeah. But for now, let's until we get Neshcom's permission to give his email out on the air. Let's say.
Oh, no. We shouldn't give it his out email. Like yeah. we should have an email that goes that we
right.
point to Neshcom.
But until then, we'll do what we always do, which is say mention weird things in the subject line and send it to JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com. Is that right?
Yes, please send it to me.
So that you can forward it over to Neshcom.
Or Neshcom, yes. Tom, you got a pick?
Yeah, I think I was telling you guys about this, maybe at Nerdtacular. I know you're both excited about Man in the High Castle, right?
Oh, yes, in the biggest way.
Which is coming to Amazon. It's based on a book by Philip K. Dick about what would have happened if Germany and Japan had won World War II. That's one of my favorite books of all time. I always list it as like my favorite sci-fi, even though it's not even really sci-fi, because I love alternate history. I even love some of the stuff that Harry Turtledove has done. Mostly I say some of because he wrote so damn much, I can't possibly read it all. But I just love that alternate history. So imagine somebody taking on the topic of what would happen if instead of the U.S. becoming a superpower, Islam never fell. And the world superpower is the United Arab States. And on November 9th of 2001, Christian terrorists fly airplanes into the Twin Towers in Baghdad.
Wow.
And instead of Israel being put in Palestine, the United Arab States had made Israel put into Germany. And so the United Arab States is allied with Israel against the Europeans who want Israel out of their homeland. And you get The Mirage by Matt Ruff.
Wow. What a sideways thing. How much historical knowledge do we need to know going into this in order to really appreciate it? Because I know that you tend to be very, very savvy in this kind of stuff.
Well, you were telling me about this on the way to Nerdtacular, and you made it sound like there is a lot of there was a lot for those who are very, you know, politically or geographically savvy in our modern age. But
yeah, it's more current events knowledge than historical. Yeah. I mean, they touch on some of the historical roots, but they don't really get into how we got here as much as talking about, you know, where is what is Saddam Hussein's role now? Because he's not a governmental leader. He's essentially, and spoiler alert, if you don't want to know, close your ears, but he's very early in the book, you find out he's the Jimmy Hoffa of the United Arab States. He's big union leader.
Somebody who vanished early right. on?
No, he didn't vanish, though. He's like a current union boss. Osama bin Laden is a senator, there are security forces. And some things are direct parallels and some things aren't, because I don't know personally how well he did this, but I think he took great pains to be true to the culture and say, well, these are the things that would persist no matter what. In that sort of society. But the United Arab States are much more open and progressive. And the Christian countries that are sort of balkanized in the United States, or what would have been the United States, are very fundamentalist. And Texas is an oil-rich dictatorship, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow. Dude, that's fantastic. I'm going to check and see if there's an audiobook. I wish I wasn't so in love with audiobooks.
And just to be clear, Neshcom in the chat room saying, you know, this is not necessarily a parallel dimension. This is just alternate history. Like, it's not like at some point.
I'm not going to answer that.
Oh, okay. Wow. Anything's possible at ZomboCom.
It is ZomboCom. It's all over ZomboCom.
What about you, Justin?
I'm going to pick. So when I was but just a lad, there was one sketch comedy show that made me fall in love with sketch comedy and really just kind of being funny. It was hugely, hugely influential. And that is The State, which so many famous actors have kind of come out of. And they've by and large kind of hung together and stayed together to do various different things, including the Wet Hot American Summer in the very early aughts on Netflix. Right now, they have revived Wet Hot American Summer into a series, which I caught the first two episodes, last night, and man, so many thoughts about just kind of our like this pet cemetery culture we live in now, where like everything we loved has to get buried in the pet cemetery of Netflix and get brought back to life, except it's a little mangier, a little shabbier, a little bit more evil than it was before.
A little more uncooperative, sure.
You know, so this, I think that this is more in the spirit of where Wet Hot American Summer was than, let's say, Arrested Development was in its Netflix incarnation versus its Fox incarnation. But it is uneven, but man, do I love it. And so much of just that trademark sort of the state David Wayne, Michael Showalter kind of writing that is so dependent on kind of an awkward sort of element is just there on display. It's really, really it is well done. And if anything, it is a gigantic, I would say cynical, kind of breakdown of prequels in general. Like every character in what is a fairly simple movie plot-wise about a bunch of campers at a summer camp in a prequel series, everybody has these insane, over-the-top, universe-expanding backstories, which is pretty funny. I like it a lot.
That's amazing. So it doesn't wear it too much on its sleeve that they're selling a message in there, or in so far as that they're mocking the entire genre that they're doing.
Well, it's not like those elements weren't there in the original show, or sorry, the original movie. It's just kind of. It's dialed up to the next level in terms of, it's, I don't know. I don't want to spoil
okay,
stuff.
Okay, all right. No. Fair enough. That's been on my list for sure, and the reviews have been fantastic, and it doesn't hurt that I was driving down the street and randomly saw a bus wrapped in a, apparently the tour literally drove past my house. From the Alamo Draft House, which was amazing. But I'll definitely check it.
And I believe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's the first David Wayne, who was the director of most of the state episodes. I believe it's the first David Wayne-led state project in episodic format since the state. Everything else that has involved a lot of those characters and a lot of those people, I don't think David Wayne was at the head of it like he was at the state. So there's a lot there, a lot to love. And if anything, it has an advantage over Arrested Development, where a lot of the people that became super famous from Wet Hot American Summer were ancillary people that you can kind of isolate. Whereas Arrested Development, that final season on Netflix sort of felt flat because you got so precious few moments where the entire cast was together sort of bantering, which was such a strength of the Fox show. So this does not suffer for that. Although you kind of realize like, oh wow, they really probably only got 3 days of Bradley Cooper,
Yeah.
And they were able to spend all of them with Amy Poehler, who probably only gave them 2.5.
Yeah. Right on. Holy cow. Hey guys. We showed up 2 minutes and 30 seconds just shy of our normal hour baseline, but I feel like we got sufficiently weird. Tom Merritt, where can we see more of your beautiful bearded mug?
Well, if you want to catch me and Brian Brushwood exchanging bearded looks, check out cordkillers.com, where I'll be giving my opinion about watching the first episode of Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, shoot. Okay, fine. I'll watch it tonight. Doggone it. I guess that settles
then,
that.
And of course, if you like sports talk radio and science fiction and fantasy,
and
Justin
puns.
Robert Young and I do something inexplicable called FSL Tonight at fsltonight.com, which is almost into the playoffs. Here. So you got to check that out.
Barreling into the playoffs, FSL Tonight.
By the way, for the record, it was so delightful at Nerdtacular to see Garrett from the Angry Chicken like walk into the live event not having the foggiest idea what FSL was, knowing that it was unexplainable, to clearly have him get what you guys are doing, this insane dance, and dive in and do a perfect moonwalk in the middle of it. It was wonderful.
It was fantastic. We're always impressed by the audience.
And it was crazy. I mean, because we don't really do a whole lot of meta discussion on FSL really at all, because it's more of a performance than it is a podcast. That audience was insane. Like we did. I mean, we're not used to numbers, and FSL are really not very friendly with each other in general. It is a small but very passionate audience. It was great. But anyway, Brian, it's been weird.
Yeah, it has. Why would you say that? That's a weird thing for you to say just out of the blue.
Well, because that's the end of the show.
Oh, well then I'll stop it now. Bye, guys.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.